Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Jerry Imhoff on the show today. Jerry is CIO and Senior VP of IT Services at Meritz. Jerry, I am so excited to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for making the time.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to it.
It's going to be fun. So growing up for you, what was growing up like?
Well, I'm a born and raised St. Louisan, and I think stereotypical middle class, grew up in South County. I have never lived anywhere other than St. Louis, although I've traveled quite a bit. Went to Catholic schools, had some of the last nuns that were around, and went to St. John Vianney High School. And actually, interestingly enough, that's where I really fostered my love of technology or was first introduced to technology, dating myself a bit. But I think it was my junior year, took a class in basic programming. The storage was on these giant floppies. I don't even know what size they were. I want to say 8-inch or whatever, but right. They were these giant floppies. I didn't initially pursue that in college. I went to the University of Missouri, St. Louis for both undergraduate and graduate school. But I didn't lose that bug. When I went to college, I switched probably my second semester from accounting to IT and never looked back.
I think that was a good choice.
It's worked out very well for you, hasn't it? Yes,
ma'am. That's wonderful. Well, good. I'm so glad to know that they had those offerings even then.
Even then? Are you referring to my age?
You're not that old.
This would have been 1978, actually, when I took that class. So
yeah, that's great. That's great. So you graduated from the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Correct.
With a degree in?
My undergraduate was in MIS, Management Information Systems, and my graduate was in general business.
Okay. And then did you go right into U.S. Bank? I think U.S. Bank was probably
So out of undergraduate, I went to Mercantile Bank, which was a precursor to U.S. Bank through acquisition. And actually, they paid for my MBA, frankly.
Really?
They did. Yeah.
Wow. That's wonderful. So did you start as a programmer?
I did. I started as a junior COBOL programmer.
You know, there's still companies using COBOL today. We still get requests for COBOL programming.
Yeah, and actually I learned a lot, and I still to this day tell people the most you will learn in an IT career is when you make a mistake and have to recover from it. Because one of the first things I was assigned to was myself and a junior analyst who was an art major in college, and she was in the management development program. And we got assigned to implement some tax law changes in the pension system and frankly didn't test well. And the former chairman of Southwestern Bell, when he got his pension check that month, it was like 9 cents or some ridiculously low amount instead of the thousands of dollars.
Oh, wow.
And not only did I learn a lot about IT then, I also learned a lot about leadership in that experience because obviously the president of the bank knew about this. In a long line of management could have come down on myself and this other individual. And they basically said, okay, we all make mistakes, figure it out and fix it.
Oh. That's wonderful.
It was a great experience.
That's a great experience. And if you had got reprimanded, you know, you may be afraid to take that next risk. That is so important. You've got to have a culture where people have the liberty to try things.
Yeah, it's safe. Absolutely.
And make it a safe place. So you were there for a while, and then I think you migrated over to Citi, right?
Citibank, right? Citicorp.
Yes.
First with an organization called Citicorp Acceptance, which financed automobile dealer floor plans. And then I moved, after a year and a half or 2 years at Citicorp Acceptance, I moved to Citicorp Mortgage. And I spent another 9 or so years there. Again, actually, I would say in the 84 timeframe, I really stopped doing anything that was programming or mainframe based.
Okay.
And moved on to, at the time we called it distributed technology,
mm-hmm.
server based PCs, things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did most of my career at Citicorp.
So then what was the precipice for you moving to where you are today?
Well, I suppose in keeping with the theme of this discussion, right? It was a leadership-oriented decision, and the situation was Citicorp, for my first 10 years there, was a very Midwestern value-based company, and you can just feel that. And the last year or so I was there, New York took over and came in and basically said, this is how we're going to run it, and you know, you're expected to work 12 hours a day, and after the 12-hour shift, you need to go to the bar and drink a brandy with us or what have you. And that I could tell really quickly that that wasn't going to be compatible with my style. I just pursued other opportunities.
Mm-hmm. So you went to Meritz. People in St. Louis definitely know Meritz, but
right?
For anybody that's listening that does not know what Meritz does, can you talk a little bit? Because it's still privately held.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah. Jerry?
Sure. And interestingly enough, along those lines, when I started at Meritz, that frankly was before the internet. So it was really tough to research companies. I suppose it would have been easier if it was a public company, but it was a private company. So all I really knew about it, it was this large company that spanned two sides of a highway in Fenton, Missouri, with a lot of brick, right?
Right?
Didn't know much about it.
Yes.
But what I can tell you now, after having been there for 24 years, it's probably best served by example. We're a research company. We do custom research. We are a travel company, meetings, events, and incentives, and a motivation company. And a couple examples I will give you is if listeners go to technology conferences or really, frankly, any conferences,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the logistics, both from registration through the event itself and all the on-site, on-ground logistics, there are many times Meritz people behind the scenes. They'll wear a badge in the name of their customer, our client. Another one would be if you stay at a major hotel chain or if you buy a automobile, whether it be domestic or not, and get a survey about the sales experience or a service experience. The vast majority of those come from us. And then from a motivation company perspective, things like sales president's clubs or employee reward programs
mm-hmm.
or different things like that, those are some of the things that Meritz does. Essentially, it's anything around people or partners and motivating them and getting them to perform better.
You have been at Meritz now for 24 years.
Right.
And
yep.
You've done a lot of different things, right?
I have, yep.
So what does that leadership journey look like for you, and how has your role changed over the years,
Boy, that's Jerry? That's a great question.
It's a loaded question.
Yeah, and I would have answered it very differently 5 years ago
mm-hmm.
because if I would summarize it, I would say up until about 5 years ago, I've managed IT and led an IT organization from day one at Meritz. I was brought in as a manager of a group. But for the first, let's say, 19 years, I thought it was really all about technology. And frankly, if I just think about the hiring process of people in my organization, until about 5 years ago, I just looked for the absolute best technical talent. And frankly, they could even be a jerk. But if they were really good technically, that's what I valued, and therefore that's what the organization valued in technology
mm-hmm.
employees. What I have come to understand in the last 5 years is while technology prowess is certainly important, one's approach and the judgment they use and the relationships they form and all those types of things, cultural-based things, I'd almost say infinitely more important than the technology side.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly a balance, which is mm-hmm. one of the adjustments we've made recently.
Right.
But just the culture and a person's approach and judgment, and frankly, their behavior matters a ton.
Right. Let's talk about that journey a little bit. How did you come to figure out that it needed to be people first? Was there a pivot point somewhere, Jerry?
Yeah, very much so. It certainly wasn't a day, but it was over a couple month period.
Sure.
And frankly, I think another leadership lesson is you have to humble yourself to understand that you don't always have all the answers. And as a matter of fact, I mean, I tell people all the time, if I'm 51% right, I'm doing pretty good because the trend is in the right direction.
Right.
I would say that, again, about 5 years ago, we were faced with a massive 35% cost reduction mandate. And of course, the moment you get that, you're like, how the heck are we going to do that,
mm-hmm.
right? And we started down that journey, and that's another part of the story we can get into. But concurrent with that, if I look at the real reason we were hit with that expense reduction mandate, a lot of it was because our internal customers, the Meritz business units, were really getting frustrated with the way we provided service. We felt we were the experts. I think we probably displayed that in our approach. We were very control-oriented, standards-oriented, and things like that. And there was a bit of a, I'm going to call it a rebellion, and third-party consultant organization came in and came up with a 35% cost reduction. The thing that forced us to realize when we were on that journey, and again, I want to say that I didn't realize it initially, is that our approach to the customer was horrible. We didn't know our customer well, our internal business units well. We didn't know their business. We didn't have relationships with them. And I had a couple of individuals that reported to me start to talk to me about changing our approach. And remember, all I ever did was hire for technology prowess, and I really resisted at first. And I think ultimately, because I didn't have a better idea, I relented and said, okay, let's try this thing. That's a story in and of itself that kind of starts and stops and missteps we took along the way. But if I fast forward 5 years, it's made all the difference in the world.
So for someone out there that may have had how you looked at things prior to, and you say, let's change this, let's take a different approach and see if we get a different outcome, how would they even start changing? Because it's a big ship. I mean, Meritz is a huge organization, right? So to steer a ship that large in a different direction cannot be an easy thing to do.
Yeah, the consulting organization didn't really have any specific advice or tactics to use of that nature. The biggest thing we did is we realized that it was a culture change we were undertaking, right, changing our approach. We realized, again, it was probably after some fits and starts, that we had to start with the management team. I know we realized that because we had a couple of managers at the time who maybe verbally would say they were on board with the change, but then their actions and then ultimately the actions or behavior or approach of their staff, you didn't see that change. Mm-hmm. And so we really had to focus on the management team. And remember, this was a 3 or 4 year journey to get from the starting point to where we are today.
Right.
And a whole lot of frustration. Changing a culture is really, really hard. But I think if there was any one word I would use that would characterize our success is relentless. We were absolutely relentless. We talked about it all the time. We put people's objectives around their approach and their behavior. We coached to it. And I certainly want to talk a lot today, frankly, about the coaching methodology, if you will, and what we do with performance management, because that's absolutely key.
Well, let's jump right into that.
If I would say there is one key to what I have learned, and it was absolutely the hardest thing for me to do, it was to understand the critical importance of honest and transparent feedback. Again, I keep referring to 5 years ago, but if you would go back 5 years ago and read the performance appraisals that were done around people in my organization, not just the ones, performance appraisals I wrote,
but anybody
in the organization,
right,
you would think every single person in the organization walked on water.
It was amazing.
Because nobody, it is really, really uncomfortable for any human being to give honest and transparent feedback.
Yeah,
that's
tough.
And again, we coached our managers to do that, but in the first time you have a conversation with an employee or really anyone, and you're trying to point out things in their behavior or in their approach that you feel needs to improve, number one, you're going to soft pedal it because it's the first time you've discussed it, right? So you're not going to do a great job doing it. But even then, the recipient of that message will be really irritated. Mm-hmm. They'll get mad at receiving that type of feedback because they've never received it before. Wait a minute, my performance appraisal said, I walk on water. What are you telling me? The second conversation gets a little bit easier, the third, the fourth, the fifth. And when it gets to a point, and you can just feel it in a relationship with the person you're coaching, you can feel it when they start to turn it from being a victim to being a consumer of what you're telling them, because they realize what you're telling them, they need to hear it, and it will let them change their approach and improve. And ultimately, all you're doing is giving them concepts to improve. It's magical after that.
Well, it's really caring about the person.
It's
so much easier, right, to just gloss over those things and, you walk on water. It's so much easier to do that. But you're really showing them that you care. Yesterday, I was in a meeting, and there was a CIO that was talking about how he had been looked over one time, and he felt like he was ready for the job. The feedback that he got was, no, you're not ready, and here's what you need to do. And he said exactly what you just said. He said, yeah, I could have had this victim mentality, and I could have been all upset about that, because I just took it as an opportunity instead of a problem.
Right.
It's an opportunity for me to take what was said and to put that into my how I approach things and how I showed up. And this person is the CIO now for this organization. But we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Jerry Imhoff. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to take a second and tell you about something our team at Technology Partners can do for your business. We have spent over two decades partnering with organizations and helping them solve their IT needs from a 360-degree perspective. A huge part of how we solve those needs is by developing custom applications of all shapes and sizes. If your team is looking for software and an out-of-the-box solution just isn't right, it's time to consider how we might be able to help. Go to tpi.co/custom apps and learn more about our awesome capabilities. Welcome back. So, Jerry, I want to talk about more on the performance management system that you guys put in.
Sure.
So, typically, in times past, companies have used like the annual review. Did you guys, when you were looking to shift this, did you change the cadence of those? And if you did, what did that look like and how did you do that?
There was a corporate HR expectation that performance reviews would be annually. I would say there was, let's say, 50% compliance with that. It was frankly, probably lower. And that's just not good enough. Even if you had one, human nature is such that you're only going to remember what happened recently. So you might discuss something that happened over the last month and you forget about the prior 11 months. The expectation we laid out with our management team, and I think one of the keys is we had to hold ourselves accountable for doing the same thing, right, is there would be real-time feedback, situational feedback that, again, honest and transparent. And so one thing I remember in particular, and we spoke earlier about how I was an initial kind of resistor and saying, hey, we're a technical organization. One of the things that really set the light bulb off for me is I was in a meeting. We were with an internal customer, and there were a number of people in my organization there. And they're essentially, I'll just call it a mini argument started between two of my folks over a particular product. And I use the appropriate methods to kind of shut it down and say, hey, let's take this offline or whatever else. And I think in the past, I would have just let it go and that would have been it. But after the meeting, I gathered my team together and I said, hey, let's just review what happened in this meeting. And I raised the point they made. And I said, now, how do you think our customer perceived that? And I could see everybody in the room go, wow, that they really didn't think too much of that, did they? And it was just one of those real-time coaching moments where the light bulb went off for me saying, boy, if I would have either A, not covered that, or B, covered it like a month later when people would have forgotten or in an annual, or worse, in an annual performance review, it would have lost it, right? And when you do that frequently enough, you see behavior changes. It just raises the bar.
There's some things packed in there that I really like. The approach that you used, because you could have easily called the team together and say, you know, we were in front of the client. That was not at all appropriate.
Again, this is something I learned from my direct reports.
I remember you saying that. Your direct reports really kind of pushed you
absolutely
to that next level, right?
And it was, while HR was engaged, we really kind of rewrote the performance management manual that my department used ourselves. And one of the things that we focused on in there, we defined the values that we had in an organization, but we talked about, especially the coaching manual for our managers, is there's task, behavior, and perception. And I think many performance appraisal approaches focus on the task way too much. And the task is really somewhat irrelevant. It's the behavior that you use to carry out that task. And then the perception of the recipient or the peer or the partner or the manager or the client or whoever. And once we started focusing our coaching on that, and as you said, you start with perception. How do you think the other person perceived the behavior you used there? It's really not complex. I believe I said in one of my blog series posts, it's not complex, but it's really, really hard because it's uncomfortable. It's a very simple concept, but doing it through repetition is the only way you're going to get good at it.
Right. You just gave me the perfect segue because you said that you've written one of your blog posts. And I know that's one of the things that you have been doing, and you've got a series. And I remember reading that you called one of them, Hello, My Name is Irrelevant.
Right.
So talk a little bit about that. You obviously have a love for writing. And
I do. I have a lot of fun with that. I go back and I still relate that to St. John Vianney High School. I had an English teacher, Mr. Berkey, in my sophomore year who developed that love of writing and the English language in me. But anyway, the blog series I actually found to be pretty cathartic. We were coming out of this 3 or 4 year period where we not only met our 35% cost reduction goal, we exceeded it at 40%. And if I'd have thought that even possible at the beginning, I would have told you were crazy. Again, it was, we had many stressful evenings and all this other kind of stuff. So again, it was a cathartic series. So one of them we titled, I had a wonderful assistant, an editor, Christiana Lachman, who helped me with that a lot. And frankly, if you thought those were long posts, you should have seen them before she got at them, because they were probably twice as long.
Right.
It can go on and on. But the "Hello, my name is Irrelevant" was frankly something that I don't know that I was conscious of. But when I started at Meritz, there were, and I certainly don't intend to be disrespectful whatsoever, but there were a whole lot of senior managers in the IT organization. Again, so this is a long time ago, that you'd see plaques on their wall that would say manager of the year from 15 years prior. And it's kind of like, what have you done for me lately? Mm-hmm. And again, I don't know if this was conscious. It's something I've looked mm-hmm. at in retrospect, but I think many of them, frankly, again, probably over-disclosing a bit, were a little bit more interested in their golf game than they were about what was going on in the company and in their department and things like that. I don't know that I was on a bullet train to irrelevancy, but I could see how that could happen, right? If you don't keep yourself sharp and fresh and really analyze what's going on in your organization. But I would say, back to the cost reduction mandate and how our customers felt about us, because we were, I'll say, a stereotypical infrastructure organization. Here's standards. You know, yes, we offered options, but our options in laptops were heavier and heaviest, right? Customers hated them, and we knew it, but boy, they were easy to support, mm-hmm, right? So we mm-hmm. used them. When you have that type of approach to your customer, you are on a bullet train to irrelevancy. And again, that's kind of the genesis of the title mm-hmm. of that particular blog post.
Well, I think you're so correct, and customer centricity is so important. And understanding how your customer is perceiving, how your customer wants to work, how your customer wants to do anything. I mean, it's really important.
And the only way you know what your customer really thinks, no disrespect to the Meritz customer experience company, but it's not just through surveys. You have to have relationships with your customers. Because a lot of times we would hide behind SLAs, right? And the SLAs would say, our help desk or our service desk surveys, we're getting 4.8 out of 5. And yet our customers were dissatisfied mm-hmm. because we didn't know them and didn't really know what they wanted. And once we made it a priority to sit with them and earn a seat at the table, that's what also aided in the cultural transformation.
Right. Sometimes the customer really doesn't know exactly what they want. And in today's world, you have to have that consulting mindset to your client. And it's not you telling the client what it is that they need. It's bringing out via questioning and more maybe than the customer even knew themselves.
Knowing your customer is really one of the philosophies. There's an organization called the Technology Business Management Council, and I was introduced to them, and ultimately now I actually serve on their board. It's a nonprofit. One of the things they talk about is running IT like a business, and I really believe in that. So much so that within Meritz IT Services, we actually have a marketing team of one, mm-hmm. but it's still, we have to do marketing. And one of the things that occurs to me about sales, and this is, a bit of a lesson learned. We had a wholesale shift within our motivation company about a year ago. The president of the company and the lead IT person and a number of the lead IT person's lieutenants turned over, and we realized after a couple months that we didn't foster relationships quick enough with the new team that came in. And that, again, that was a big lesson learned. And we had to do some scrambling to catch up there.
I see more blog posts in your future.
Yeah,
the lessons learned, you could fill up an encyclopedia probably, right?
Yeah, as you were aware, a couple of months ago, I announced my intent to retire from Meritz, which I will retire effective March 31st of 2020. And I do really enjoy writing, so I absolutely think you will see more of those.
I do believe we will, and we'll be sharing those. So this is something extra. Let's dive into that just a little bit. What is the something extra that you see embodied in one of your current or one of your former team members?
It was actually in a couple, the something extra I've seen in a couple of my direct reports, and surprise, surprise, it's going to relate to culture. Another thing I'll quickly mention is the expectation for transparent and timely communication. We tell our team that it's in any direction. So if people see me mm-hmm. or anyone else doing something that they think our approach was off mm-hmm. or they pick up a perception of a customer, they're obligated to talk to us about that, which is wonderful. The something extra that was really a completely unanticipated situation for me is, after we had been a year or two into this timely feedback and talking about their behavior, people started to realize the things we were coaching them on was transferable to every aspect of their lives. So their spouse, their partner, their kids, their friends, their whomever, right? And it's been really rewarding for me. I have had, I probably would need to take off my shoes and socks because I've run out of fingers to count on. Mm-hmm. The number of people who have approached me and basically said, thank you for what you've brought to this organization, because it's made a difference not only in my professional life, but also I have
a better marriage.
I have a better marriage because because I use these principles at home. That's just so rewarding.
Well, you need to write more about that.
Well, if you'd have told me again 5 years ago when I was resisting all this stuff, how rewarding I would find it and that I would be sitting here today. We've talked almost nothing about technology. And for a CIO of an organization, $1.5 billion organization, to sit here and have the opportunity, thankfully, the opportunity to talk to you about this and to not talk about IT and to talk about culture and behavior and relationships, that is crazy.
Certainly. Merits shifted, and you were a big piece of that, shifting more toward not that technology is the trump card, but it's really about people first and the culture. So what about, is there a leadership misstep? And we've kind of already talked about
I hinted at it before. You have to be ever vigilant, I think, because we felt really good about the relationship that we had established with one of these business units and their IT leaders and the teams. And when those shifted over, we forgot the basic principle about the customer relationship and the fostering the customer relationship. The new team that was brought in was really, really good, and they started to move off on their own using different cloud technologies. You know, we had it's a bit of an old school thing, but we worked really well with the prior organization to establish a very secure and flexible and nimble cloud environment in a particular cloud provider. I won't give them a plug, right? Mm-hmm. And when the new group came in, they preferred a different cloud provider, and they started to use them. And we didn't see it, right? We didn't know they were doing it. They were off on their own. And some things happened down the road that made us aware that they were doing that. And then we started to engage. And again, we had some significant stumbles getting them to trust us. You know, we were pointing them back to the standard cloud provider. And they had good reason to use their new one.
Right.
And so we had to educate ourselves on that and reengage. Mm-hmm. There was actually another misstep that I would say my leadership team and I realized about a year ago. And that is, in our initial messaging to the team when we talked about the culture change we wanted to make, all we talked about was culture. Culture, 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 approach, 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 behavior, behavior, behavior. And while those things, as I said, are really, really important, the message they heard was that technology wasn't important anymore. And while they did an awesome job focusing on culture and relationships
behavior.
And behavior and things like that, frankly, let some of those things, because while I kind of jokingly said we were all about standards, standards are important and having process is important and things like that. But we talk so much about empowerment and judgment, it really kind of went to the other extreme. And I think a lot of that was around our communication and messaging. Mm-hmm. And again, if I had it to do over, I would change that a bit and talk about it being much more of a blend than an opposite extreme. So we did a 180 from this control and standards to culture. So right now we're dialing that back. And one of the things that my boss, who's the CFO of Merits, has added to our lexicon is confident expertise. Because I think we were so focused on providing our customers options and whatever the customer wanted, even if they wanted something that the technologists and us knew probably wasn't the best thing, we went with it anyway.
Right.
Just because that's what the customer wanted.
Right.
And now we've added
this
the phrase
confident.
Of confident expertise to make sure, hey, I can see where you may think that is valuable, but let me tell you based on my experience what we've seen.
And that's where the trusted advisor comes in.
Very much so, consulting. Yep.
Because
exactly.
Like I said, sometimes they don't know what they don't know.
Right. And if you're going to run IT like a business, if you let the customer have whatever they want, that's not very scalable, right? And you're not going to be in business for very long.
Well, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Humility. And frankly, I was really proud. Both of my sons have told me how much they value humility themselves, and you can see them practice that. But I think humility in opening yourself up to not having all the answers and taking input, and then certainly having the courage to say, okay, yes, this is the way we're going to go, is absolutely significant.
Courage is important too, right?
Right.
So you've got something really exciting coming up, and that is in March of 2020. And are you just going to sit on the beach and eat bonbons? Well, I kind of tend not to think so.
I do know when I am on the beach, I've already told plenty of people that expect the stereotypical pictures of my feet in the sand just to give them a little bit of
yes,
trouble, certainly.
Right.
But, a couple of the other things I want to do, I am passionate about giving back. I'm certainly pursuing board service and advisory roles. But part of that giving back as well, and again, you plant seeds in yourself, I guess. And mm-hmm. both of my sons, they're grown and out of the house. So I guess my wife and I did our jobs. They're both homeowners, and I've helped them both. I call it rehab. That sounds a little bit strong, but certainly remodel various things in our house. And I don't hesitate to try anything.
Sure.
It's the things my dad taught me, that measure twice, cut once.
Oh, yes.
But I absolutely want to get involved in things like Habitat for Humanity or things like that, because I think there's no better de-stressor for me anyway when life stresses or technology or leadership stresses occur to swing a hammer. There's a start and a finish to projects.
It's good for the soul.
Oh, it's neat.
For sure. Yes, we've done that as a team. And I always say,
great.
I call it team building with a purpose, with a bigger purpose. And anybody that has not done that, I would highly recommend it, because you've got different function areas that are up on the roof together. And that they don't necessarily interact all the time.
I'll squeeze one of those in my last 3 months.
There you go. There you go. Well, very good. Well, we are so excited for you in this next journey. And I know that you're not just going to sit back and not do. You're going to continue to, like you said, give back. So if there are organizations out there that maybe need an advisory board, something like that, or there's a board seat open, you'd be open to that,
oh,
right,
absolutely,
Jerry?
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. You can find me on LinkedIn.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you so much for being here. It's just been my pleasure to have you.
And I've thoroughly enjoyed it. You make it easy, so thank you so much.
Very good.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.